the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Welcome, Talk Catholic, the website.com. Your host, Tim Kilcoyne. No agendas here, just the straight and narrow. Through Mary to Jesus, the Catholic faith proclaimed and preserved. Hope to see you here every week.
Talk Catholic with Tim Kilcoyne, and it is our first Saturday, and we will move on shortly to an interview with David Rodriguez of the Fatima Center, a part four in our series, and we're going to be speaking to the Fatima message, ever apropos for October, and I hope you do have October 13th on your calendar, which memorializes one great day when the sun danced. I'll talk to this in just a second. Let's not forget our first Saturday devotions, which also comes from the Fatima message, where Our Lady very specifically told us we need to do five first Saturdays consecutively to be at peace on our judgment day when she will come to our side. And all we have to do throughout our life is do five first Saturdays during the course of the liturgical year. And this involves going to Mass. Prior to that, let's get that confession in, even though you do have 8 days to fulfill all of the requirements. So it's going to Mass, going to confession, saying the rosary, meditating 15 minutes on a particular mystery of the rosary. And I was thinking, Father Ripperger has often said, you want to keep the demons out of your life? 15 minutes of meditation a day will do it. So please, we're moving towards the incarnate word becoming flesh, not too far down the road, Christmas. And it'd be great to have those five first Saturdays done by then, but not a big deal if they're not. Just make them five consecutive first Saturdays. We're going to now join David in this part four interview, and I just want to make quick commentary in the times in which we live, where we've had unprecedented events happen, like the shutting down of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass during the pandemic. And let's not forget the Akita message that talked about bishop against bishop, cardinal against cardinal. We have terrible division amongst the hierarchy. We're supposed to be one holy, Catholic, apostolic. Well, we've got something else going on these days. The shallowness of the homily, as I focused on so often and will continue to do so, where they're under obligation to speak to the Ten Commandments and how they're violated in our world today, not 2,000 years ago. There is just so much that points to Fatima right now. And yet, and let's not forget the leaders meeting in China just recently. Is anyone talking about the consecration of Russia that Our Lady asked for very specifically? And has it been done, you know, in detail exactly as to how she wanted it done with bishop in their cathedrals? Ladies and gentlemen, we could be minutes away from some of the worst possibilities of the Fatima message if we don't take heed. And it starts with remembering or discovering for the first time what Fatima was all about. October 13th was one day that was reminiscent of the flood of Noah, where the sun danced, and over 71,000 people actually saw this. You know, we have newspaper clips of this being verified and confirmed. So please take heed of today's show in particular, David Rodriguez of the Fatima Center. And we'll pick it up right there as we speak exactly to the details of the message.
I'd like to kind of backtrack, actually, because of the depth of knowledge that you have on Our Lady of Fatima and being from the Fatima Center. Give us a little tutelage, truly, to be sure that everybody's well aware of what Father Gruner, and maybe you can speak to him. What was the impact of Father Gruner's life on you, perhaps? And, you know, the impetus for what you do now.
Sure. lot that could be said there. Father Gruner, we're celebrating the 10th year now, maybe celebrating is the wrong word. We're remembering and honoring his memory, especially this year, because it was 10 years ago that he died on April 29th, 2015, quite unexpectedly. But many, many people knew Father Gruner because he brought the message of Fatima to the forefront. That really was his singular mission. And so I guess to understand Father Gruner, I have to step back a little bit just to explain some very, very quick points about Our Lady of Fatima. I don't know if all the listeners know these points, but she does appear six times in 1917, preceded by three apparitions of St. Michael to Saints Francisco Jacinta and Sister Lucia, their cousin, when they were still very young children and shepherds. And Our Lady promised a great miracle, which was witnessed by at least really more than 70,000 people. It's the greatest public miracle that's ever been witnessed. I say public here because even though the resurrection is a greater miracle, right, than the public, no one was around to witness it.
Right.
And Our Lady foretold it as to time, day, place. Very specifically, you don't get that normally when miracles take place. They're not prophesied. It's going to happen on this day, at this place, at this time.
Right.
So that kind of puts it in a whole other category, and God was speaking to us, and that confirms her message as well as many other miracles. And she explained that the world was going to continue to get into a worse and worse situation, worse wars, even to the point of great suffer and martyrdom by the Holy Father, by the Church, by the good people, and certainly bad, that it could even reach a point where there'd be the annihilation of nations, that the errors of Russia would spread all over the world. And the errors of Russia, mind you, are not just communism, they're deep. The errors of Russia are rejection of the papacy. The errors of Russia include the lies of evolution, that men came from monkeys and this sort of thing.
Right.
The errors of Russia include this extreme feminism and abortion and contraception.
Yep.
And certainly all the economic things that people associate with a communist system and a totalitarian regime and atheism. You know, that was a huge error of Russia, perhaps the principal one. So the errors of Russia are vast. Our Lady is very precise in her words. She never spoke of errors of communism.
Yep.
She spoke of errors of Russia. And they have spread. They've spread all over the world. We're suffering from them. We're continuing to suffer from them until we obey Our Lady.
Yeah.
So she came in 1917 because of this. She wanted to bring us this message of hope and love. And she explained that the only solution was what God wanted, and that was he wanted devotion to her Immaculate Heart.
Yeah.
So this is a solution for our times. And the main ways that we promote this is by praying the rosary every day, by wearing our grand scapular. This is like our sword and our shield in the spiritual war. By offering prayer and penance every day, the things that come our way that God allows, we offer them in the spirit of reparation to repair the damage done by sins. And then, very specifically, she asked for the First Saturday devotion. That's something that we can all hopefully do at our parishes, and the First Saturday devotion consists in every First Saturday, you do these four acts with the intention of offering reparation for the sins against Our Lady. And the four acts are, you go to Mass, correction, you receive Holy Communion. Most people do that at Mass, but a person who's sick in the hospital could still receive Communion. So you receive Holy Communion, you go to confession within 8 days, making a good confession, you pray the rosary that day, and then you do 15 minutes of meditation, all the mysteries of the rosary, and you offer those four acts as reparation to Our Lady's Immaculate Heart. That's going to foster the Immaculate Heart devotion in our parishes, in our families, and we can do that every First Saturday, to keep it going. But then she also asked for the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And that's very important, but that is left up to the Pope in union with all the bishops. So the Pope has to get together with all the bishops and consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Has it been done?
That will signal then a great restoration. And this is going to be the only solution. This is the only solution for our times. I guarantee you.
So in your mind, it hasn't been done exactly.
Well, no, not in my mind. In the reality of the objective world, it has not been done. That's clear as day, but the only promise that once the consecration took place of Russia, that Russia would convert, and that means convert to the one Holy Catholic Apostolic Church, ending the thousand-year-long schism that has existed in the Church between East and West.
Yeah.
Russian Orthodoxy is the single largest group of Orthodoxy in the world today.
Yeah.
And that there would be a period of peace granted to the world. We've never seen a period of peace since 1917. There have been nonstop wars, and the 20th century and now these next couple of decades has seen more wars and more deaths from war than all other centuries of mankind's history combined and far outdistanced it. So we've never seen any kind of peace.
And so all these various consecrations that have been done, they did not meet the requirement, correct?
Correct. They did not. And as I say, it's more important because people can begin to argue and, let's say, quibble. I'm going to use that word, quibble over these conditions, as you say. And I obviously would say, well, you got to follow our words, the words of Our Lady, very clearly,
right,
as she asked for it. But the bottom line is that Our Lady is going to work these great miracles, like the one I just mentioned. That's why Auschwitz was also important, kind of coming back.
Yep,
the Auschwitz miracle is a great one. And there's others. I mean, there's Hiroshima, there's Nagasaki, great miracles there. There's when Portugal was consecrated, the things that happened in Portugal in the 1930s. So we have historical precedents when the message of Fatima has been followed in the 20th century and great miracles have been wrought. So the thing is, it's very simple for anyone to know. You don't need a pope, you don't need a bishop, and you don't, certainly don't need me to tell you when the consecration is done correctly. Our Lady herself will speak volumes, and every Catholic and people that are non-Catholic,
yes,
are going to see great dramatic changes in the world, because again, what God is, you know, this was, you know, what you're asking God, you know, why won't you convert that poor nation of Russia without this consecration?
Right.
You know, because she was praying so much for it. And our Lord told her, it's because I want the world to know this is a triumph of the Immaculate Heart.
Yes.
So you couldn't have a consecration. It's got to be very clear,
right,
that this is divine action at work. So when the consecration does take place, we're going to know, and we're going to see things very quickly.
There will be fruit.
Yes. And it'll be fruit the likes of which we've never experienced in the world before. I mean, I think a small scale comparatively, it is huge, but comparatively, was Our Lady of Guadalupe here in Mexico City. 5 million Catholics were leading the Catholic faith in Europe, the old world, joining Protestant groups. And Our Lady and the Spanish Franciscans and Dominicans were not having any success in the New World with the native population there. And there was about to be a big revolution. They were trying to, like, cast out the Christian white Spaniards and stuff. And then Our Lady appears and converts an entire continent. And in the same 5 years, some 8 to 10 million become Catholic.
Yeah,
people were just streaming, coming and requesting baptism. And the Franciscan friars talk about how they spent all day just baptizing all these Indians who were coming, you know, and how they had to keep up with the catechizing. It was just stupendous what they saw. And it wasn't their work. It was Our Lady. I mean, if she can do this, she can do greater things.
Now, David,
so we'll see something that dwarfs what we see happening in 1531 there in the Americas.
Right. Two things come to mind. The idea that more souls go to hell over carnal sin, and also the apostasy. The third secret. Talk to us a little bit about this great mystery, you know, that it still seems, well, I don't think it's a mystery anymore, is it?
Well, it's not too much of a secret for those who roll up their sleeves and do some of the studying, but a lot of people, I think, have been fooled to some extent by the fact that on June 26th of 2000, the Vatican did release a vision and claimed that this was the entirety of the third secret. We know from a lot of other testimony given, and this was testimony given by the popes themselves, like John Paul, like Benedict, Pius XII, and others, and cardinals, high-ranking cardinals who had been privy to the secret, and all of this before 2000, where they talked about the secret, and they gave us clues to it. You know, a famous one, for example, is in 1952, a Jesuit, Father Josef Schweigel, he's an Austrian, he's working as a professor at the Gregorian University in Rome, and with Pius XII's approval, he goes over to speak with Lucia Fatima, and comes back, has like 31 questions for her about Fatima and the Third Secret. Now, when he returns, and this is great, because again, you can look at the testimony, it's from 1952, before a lot of the controversy descended upon the message of Fatima.
Yeah.
Because it's being blocked. It's being blocked by the devil, and those in powerful positions within the church are blocking it.
Yep.
But he came back and he said, look, the third secret's got two parts. One of it is obviously the continuation of the words of Our Lady when she said, in Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved. And the other part has to do with the Pope. But I can't say anything else. And then he ends it there. He says, yeah, I can't speak. So we knew from the start, like back in 1952, we already know that there are two parts to the third secret. One is the logical continuation of the words of Our Lady in Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved, and the other one has to do with the Pope. And then in 2000, they revealed the vision, and the vision certainly has to do with the Pope.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty convinced that the vision is that second part that has to do with the Pope, but we have no words of Our Lady.
Do you make any connection between the
references to the words of Our Lady that others made? Even in 1960, when the Vatican decided under John the 23rd that they would not release the third secret, they said the words of the Lady will always remain hidden, basically, or will not be revealed.
Huh.
But something to that effect. But the point is they used the phrase, the words of Our Lady. And what they revealed in 2000 didn't have any words of Our Lady.
What about the Akita message? Is there a tie-in with Fatima here?
I certainly think so. I think there is, you know, and it's not just me saying that. You have, I believe he was still cardinal at that time, Cardinal Josef Ratzinger, Benedict XVI, who said that in essence, because he was in charge of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, so he was the highest authority right after the Pope on these matters, and he said that in essence, in essence, the message of Akita and the message of Fatima are the same. And so it's fascinating because you have all these things coming up in Akita that from what has sort of been publicly revealed, we don't necessarily know from Fatima.
Yeah.
So you sort of sit scratching your head saying, but Our Lady's talking about this brave, you know, cardinal opposing cardinal, bishop opposing bishop, priest who, this is from Akita, priests who, you know, are devoted to Our Lady will be, you know, ostracized, will be persecuted from within, fire falling from heaven, you know, that there's devastation in the world. Both have a very important emphasis on Our Blessed Mother, but there's a lot of Akita. So some do speculate, and I think with good reason, how exactly, I don't know, but I think with good reason one could think that much of what was revealed at Akita is in fact connected to the message of Fatima and precisely the
It would explain the silence regarding all of it, regarding on the part of the hierarchy. Talking about cardinal against cardinal, bishop against bishop isn't too popular.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the more to explain it even is in, I believe it's 1931, 1932, when Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli, who was to become Pius XII, so at this time he's still Secretary of State under Pius XI, and so Sister Lucia and her bishop and her spiritual director, they're all trying to get the message to the Pope to, in fact, request the consecration of Russia, because on June 13th, 1929, that's when Our Lord said, now is the date to consecrate Russia. So it gets to Pius XI, Pius XII, as his Secretary of State, kind of a right-hand man, is privy to much of it, and he has a famous statement where he said, I am worried about these statements by Sister Lucia of Fatima about the suicide of altering the faith, the destruction it will bring, how like the lamp, the sanctuary lamp, will be out in our churches, we'll search in vain to find Our Lord. And so you sit there and you look at this quote from 1932 again, and you say, but when did Sister Lucia ever talk about the dangers of the suicide of altering the faith and the morals and her liturgy and her doctrine and her history? Well, it's not in the message of Fatima from what we know, but if it's in the third secret, and it clearly is, Sister Lucia would have been aware of it and would have been conveying those messages to the hierarchy. And so that's where Pius XII gets this. It's because he's got this, and he has this understanding that Our Lady is warning. And the suicide, that's a key word, because as we know, suicide does not mean somebody else invades you and it kills you. Suicide means you inflict it upon yourself.
Internal division.
So the church is committing a kind of suicide. It's certainly a spiritual suicide because we're altering the faith, the liturgy, the doctrine, the truth that says that Christ our Lord, the eternal Son of God, revealed to us and died so that we could get to heaven. That's what's come under this great, you know, diabolical disorientation. And that, and so that's all wrapped up in the third secret of Fatima. We believe Our Lady was giving us a warning against altering faith in our liturgy, in morals, in doctrine, and yet that's exactly what's happened. And those who are overseeing those changes and those alterations and our abandoning of tradition and opening ourselves to the world and basically just becoming a church that's just like the world, there's no real difference between values now, well, that's the suicide, and that's leading to all these terrible things. So those who have orchestrated those changes and still support those changes, well, they don't want the third secret out, because once the third secret's out, then many of the laity, like we're saying, these airways, evangelizing airways, get this message of truth out to people, will start saying, well, look at what Our Lady warned us back in 1917. She was telling us not to let this happen, and now it's happened, and we see the fruit of it. We know her words are true because we've seen what's happened, but we've got to get back to.
And what about,
we got to get back to where we were.
What about Garibandal?
We will pause right there and get back to the finish of the Fatima message for sure from David Rodriguez of the Fatima Center next month, first Saturday. This is WQPH Radio 89.3 FM. Well, in our last session, Bill was laying it out there regarding academic lefty intellectualism, people that are very discontented in their own personal lives, and using the example of Karl Marx himself as his own mother had made the comment that she wished he had accumulated more capital than simply writing about it. He was pampered and he was a loafer. And this is the great founding father of communism, pretty much, Engels in addition. And here we are with the great battle on for the soul of our country and our church. Let us not think twice that the problems in our Catholic Church
do not stem
from also
left-wing intellectualism
at the top
in way too many circles
who want to continue on down this road of utopia.
They call it social justice.
That just has never worked in the history of humanity because of a thing called original sin, where the few end up starving the masses. Let us go down the home stretch with Bill.
Those on the left who hate America are more radical today than at any time in the 1960s. They are increasingly violent, and even those who do not engage in violence are reluctant to condemn it. There is a big difference between the violence of the 60s radicals and the violence committed by today's radicals. There was still a glimmer of hope in the 1960s that the utopian society could really be reached. Not so today. In the 60s, the violence that accompanied the civil rights movement was done to accelerate the pace of change to force equal conditions. The violence, though inexcusable, did have a constructive purpose. Today, those who engage in violence are not pursuing a noble end. They are pursuing anarchy. Instead of moving on, coming to terms with the limits of the human condition, today's secular-driven extremists are more like an angry mob that is not only furious with existing conditions, but also furious that they are out of ideas. Intellectually spent, they are content to tear things down. They prefer the rubble to the imperfect status quo. They do not believe in free speech or assembly, and they abhor the courts. Their hatred for religion, and especially for our Judeo-Christian heritage, cannot be exaggerated. Most of all, they hate America. It is easy to understand why those who hate America hate capitalism, the cops, and the courts. But what motivates them to take up the causes of abortion and transgender politics? Their idea of liberation, like so many of the intellectuals who inspire them, has nothing to do with freeing everyone from nature and nature's God. They deny the humanity of the unborn child, and they deny the God-given and nature-based differences between men and women. So where does this leave the left? It should be obvious that they are angry at the status quo. Less obvious, however, is that because they have no vision for the future, they have turned their anger inwards. They are raging against themselves. At the close of the 20th century, an honest left-wing intellectual, Russell Jacoby, saw what was happening. He declared the belief in utopia to be stone dead, quote-unquote. The fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 and the collapse of the Soviet Union a few years later were the final nails in the coffin. A new consensus has emerged. There are no alternatives. Nothing could be more devastating to utopian dreamers than this. What we have today is a blend of anarchism and nihilism. If only they didn't blame everyone for their sorry condition, they might be able to find the road back. And in Bill's conclusion, as we have seen, the religious and secular visions of man and society are profoundly different. One reveres truth, the other denies it. One reverences God-governed liberty, the other worships libertinism. One hopes for equality of opportunity, the other pursues the chimera of equality of outcome. One believes in human nature, the other believes in utopia. Can there be compromises? For the most part, no, there cannot be. Nor is there some magical third way. Prudence dictates, however, against an all-or-nothing strategy of Judeo-Christian moral restoration. To successfully move the needle, we need to tailor our approach to what is possible, not to what is ideal. If the citizens of a given state are not prepared to adopt strict restrictions on abortion, but are open to some restrictions, then the latter objective should be pursued. The goal should be to win, to defeat the secular agenda, and winning means dealing realistically with current circumstances. If we are to see a restoration of the religious vision of man and society, the Catholic Church will have to become more prominent and start leading again. Too many priests and bishops have allowed the clergy sexual abuse scandal, an abomination that took place mostly between 1965 and 1985, to lower their profile, especially on moral issues. This is a mistake. The scandal is long over, notwithstanding media efforts to keep it current. We cannot play into the hands of the enemies of the Catholic Church. They want to intimidate the Church and silence her moral voice. We cannot let them. The hierarchy needs to pay more attention to what lay Catholics want. When respondents to a particular survey were asked if the Catholic Church should speak out more on moral issues, the results were encouraging. By a margin of 74% to 19%, respondents answered affirmatively. This is good news for those members of the clergy who have been reluctant to speak out more forcefully. The laity wants them to be more vocal. Oh, have you heard that here at WQPH from a guy named Tim Kilcoin? But the laity also have to speak up more. The days are gone when Father Murphy could be expected to do the job alone. This means that lay Catholic activists can no longer settle for addressing the easy issues as a quick way to raise funds. They need to step up when the going gets tough. And Catholic teachings are not the problem. They are the solution. They're not outdated or in need of revision. They are eternal truths about human beings and about God. Orthodoxy sells. Heterodoxy does not. Why would anyone want to belong to a church that promotes a moral vision that is indistinguishable from that which is found among the chattering class in the media or in social media musings? Believers want to belong to something special, not something mundane. Mostly, they want to belong to something true.
And thus the reason for this book review. This is WQPH Radio 89.3 FM. I'll make my commentary next week. God bless.
Let your light shine. That is what it's all about here at WQPH Radio 89.3 FM. But we need to hear your story. You want your voice to be his voice. That is making the faith known to others. Please, my number is 877-625-3727. Tim Kilcoyne, talkcatholic.com. St. Mother Teresa told us, your ministry is your work right where you are. Grab on to this microphone. God bless.